Hello, thanks once again for taking the time to download and listen to the podcast. This is a football fans podcast and the people behind CelticUnderground.net. Another marvellous away performance from Celtic. Yeah, that's five unbeaten in a row, and that is Celtic's last 27 European games. 60% of the games have either been won or drawn away from home, so we are not doing too bad away from home in Europe, and another great result. Things starting off well in the group. We were a better team for most of the game. Should have had a penalty before we did have the penalty. Anyway, straight away decided to get Sean Hoddleston and Anthony Murray on to talk about the performance, and then a very quick preview of Sunday's Kilmarnock game. So I am joined now by our European correspondent Anthony Murray and our other part of Britain correspondent Sean Adamson. How are you guys doing?
Very good.
I'll take any compliment you want to fire at me. Just fire one at me, you know.
I really should think about introductions before I start recording. It's just to show that these things are not professional. So we are recording this. The Rangers game is still going on. So we're that close to the end of the Celtic game. So I'll start off, Anthony. General. Overall, before we get into the detail, happy with the result?
Really, really, really happy. I had that. There's a strange thing that happens, like in the hour before a game. Mm-hmm. You know, there's either a confidence or a fear kicks in. For example, like when it's a Rangers game. Basically, every Rangers game since the 6-2. I only get a wave of, oh, it's going to be another 6-2, of course. And basically I've had 20 years of, yeah, of course we're going to score another 6 against them, they're shite. But in Europe it's obviously a different thing, and this one today really was a wave of, oh, they're going to be brilliant, aren't they? They're going to be 11 giant big French African guys that are just going to run over us. And I was really terrified. So to come out of it with a good point, I'm ecstatic.
Sean, how are you feeling pre-game?
I was feeling quietly confident. I think I suffer from a similar, although not as extreme, pre-match ambiance as Anthony suffers from. There's some games I go into and I feel quite confident about, and this was one. You know, I was quietly confident. I thought the team was in good shape. We've got a good tactical shape now. We've got would you say the team picks itself these days, actually, doesn't it? Really, certainly the back line does at the minute.
I certainly thought based on injuries, yeah, and the team we had, and even without injuries, I thought I was. That's pretty much. In fact, I would say that's the strongest stand 11 we've had all season.
Yeah, and also, you know, Ren, I haven't exactly been setting a header on fire in France. All you know, the PSG result notwithstanding that, they've been fairly inconsistent from what I can see. But yeah, I was, you know, look, if you had offered me a point before, would I have taken it? Yeah, definitely.
Well, so. I'm going to. In a I told you so fashion, St. Anthony of our site, and text message conversation with him at 4 o'clock today.
You managed to talk him off the ledge then, didn't you?
Yeah, well, this is the conversation. What's your prediction? That's his to me. Mine, 1-1.
Right? Did you put money on it? Did you put money on it?
He then replies, usual away Euro performance, start well, lose soft goal, poor defending at set pieces, second half collapse. My reply to that was, we have lost only four of the last 13 away European games, therefore, your description would not be a usual away performance.
well, aren't you the wise one?
Yeah. Yeah. To which he
then chucked in the obvious thing of, yeah, but of those 13 games, a lot of them are playing rubbishy teams in Champions League qualifiers, yeah. Which, because I'm actually, despite not wanting Neil Lennon as manager, I'm now actually pretty confident that we're going to win the league by about 20 points. And we're going to do well in the Europa League. I then looked back even further and was able to say that we had either won or drawn 15 of the last 26 away European games, meaning that we have only lost 42% of our last 26 European away games, which includes one Europa League group stage and two Champions League group stages, where we played PSG, Barcelona, Man City, Bayern Munich, Borussia Mönchengladbach within those games.
The Mönchengladbach was a strange one, though, wasn't it? That in Glasgow they looked just, you know, welcome to big school, better yeah. than us. Mm-hmm. And then we went out there and played really well. And it was like, that was one of these games that I'd have thought, oh God, this is scary stuff. And then we went out and put in one of our best performances that year.
And Callum McGregor had a chance to win it in the last yeah. minute or so.
Yeah. It was Dembele equalised, wasn't it? Didn't he?
No. Oh, now you're testing memories, and I'm now at that age. I don't really remember. So
who are you again?
Exactly. So I'm going down. So I'm reading those out for a bit of a I told you so. My expectation of the game panned out. So Sean, we just touched on the team. You were happy with the team then? Happy with the team selection from Neil Lennon?
Very much so, yeah, and I think, you know, a lot of our guys are playing on form now, aren't they? You know, I was quite happy with that. I was looking forward to the game, actually. I thought the referee was slightly inconsistent tonight.
Slightly.
Cough.
That's right.
I thought Ryan Christie took his penalty well. I thought Fraser Foster played really well tonight, pulled off a really good save in the half-hour mark. Do you think Fraser Foster has made a real difference to the team?
Well, what do you think, Anthony?
Absolutely massive, yeah. Yeah. I said in the previous podcast, I thought he might be, you know, a great, great signing. And I just, even when they get the penalty, the fact that there is a percentage of you thinking, oh, he might save this. There's a good chance he'll save this. He didn't. But just absolute belief. And then when he made that save from the, was it Da Silva or someone? Mm-hmm. I don't know. The guy came in from the right, smashed it with his left foot. As soon as he made that save, you're like, oh, this is the guy that does this away, you know, away at the new comp, away at whatever. He does put up the shutters and can make those, you know, mm-hmm. tricky away games into valuable points. I love Fraser Foster. I think he's going to be a great. I think he makes a huge difference.
It made me wonder as well, how long had Scott been actually been trading on his performance at Ibrox? You know, it made me wonder, you know, how effective was Craig Gordon really? You know, I like to see stats that would, you know, give me a definitive judgment there as well. But just my gut feeling, particularly last 2-3 games, Big Fraser coming back in, I don't know, I just feel like we're just more solid. And I think it also helps that Big Chris Julian has stepped up to the mark. He looks like a real leader. Rob Douglas used to say about, you know, that early 2000 team, you know, those three big lads in front of him, he used to call them as linebackers, didn't he?
Yeah.
I think it's something fairly similar with him and I here, to a certain degree. I like seeing Julian at the back as well. So
I like a goalkeeper who's in control of his box, and mm-hmm. and I do think, I mean, I have said on here before, I used to think Rab Douglas was filled his goal when somebody was taking a penalty, which gave you confidence he might save it. But I also always think, if the goalkeeper fills his goal, not only is he got a chance of saving the penalties, as you point out, Anthony, but also I think it increases the chances of the guy missing the penalty, because the keeper looks so big that the guy thinks, I've got to put this in the farthest corners to be able to get past this goalkeeper, and he's more likely to hit it past the post. So
there's a real perception thing there, isn't there?
So you're happy with the team, Anthony. How are you happy with the start of the game, the way Celtic started the game?
I guess in a sense it was a bit like Ibrox. It was like let's get to the 10 minutes and not do anything stupid. And very, very early on, there was some confident touches by midfielders, and the flag was planted that, all right, we're not here to do something stupid. We are disciplined and motivated, but we're not being cavalier. It was a really sort of professional beginning, which I think led through the whole match. I thought it was a relatively mature performance. I was disappointed, that moment of magic with Edouard, that then he went down and got the booking. The first time I saw it, I thought, I didn't like the way the referee did that "I'm not looking at you whilst booking you" thing.
Yeah.
I may have hurled a swear word at my TV at that point. Won't tell you which ones. But then you saw the replay and you're like, it probably was. And at that point, there's a bit of shame, sweeps upon you. But
it's one of those ones as well. Why did he go down? He could have stayed up on his feet,
He definitely went down, though.
A complete rush of blood to the head, just thinking, I better go down here, just make the best of it, sort of. I don't understand that mentality. But
The one thing I'm not saying in this occasion, it's just I'm noticing this a few times of late in games that Chris Sutton's been on. Chris Sutton's very much the, if a player goes down in the box, it's either a penalty or a book the guy for diving.
He said that on the commentary tonight.
Yeah.
But actually, sometimes a guy can go down in the box and it's neither a dive nor a penalty.
Uh-huh. Well, cast your mind back to, was it Tony Mowbray's first game at Ibrox, wasn't it? And we had, I think, 3 penalty shouts in the first half alone. And Mark Wilson got booked for diving, didn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it wasn't a foul, but it definitely wasn't a dive. There has to be a bit of room for nuance, but unfortunately, I think that's not often shown by some commentators now, is it?
Yeah, so the first thing that happens in the game of real note that gives you an indication that we could actually get a result here, Sean, is the one that's flashed across goal with Elianoussi. He's just a fraction too late.
Yeah, he read it a bit too late now, didn't he? It was really good play, really good link-up play before that. I thought Elianoussi actually had a good game. I've been really impressed with him since he's arrived. And Edwards, it was a real nice wee moment of skill now, wasn't it? It was unlucky, Maybe with a bit more sharpness, he'll read those situations better in the future.
Well, that's what I wonder, Anthony. I wonder if the reason he was just a fraction slow is because it's only his second game in a year of football or something like that.
I mean, that could be the case. In the same way, Forster coming off his line, an attacker making a bomb into the box. A guy who's been out of the game, those little yards and half metres will make a difference. Hopefully in a few weeks' time he's getting a toe on that and making a goal. I was really pleased with it. It was Bolly that put in the chance, in the cross.
Because
I was, all of 3 weeks ago when Bolly was the world's worst player in Europe, I was defending him, saying give him a chance. And then after Ibrox, I've been holding off. It's not just a contrary position, but I could have seen Bolly not being brilliant still, and falling out the team, and maybe Taylor becoming the first choice left back. But after Ibrox and after tonight, I'm now moving back towards I think we might have a player here.
Well,
I don't think he's the world's best defensive left back, but I think he's a guy that can do a shift, and that was the best ball I've seen him put in.
He's really good going forward, and he was getting down the left quite a few times tonight and putting in really good balls. Does his defensive work, does his defensive side of his play need a bit of work? Undoubtedly. But I think we've got a really, really exciting prospect on our hands there,
So then the next sort of major thing of note in the game is the penalty. So, Sean.
Sorry, I don't know that one.
Sean, tell me about the penalty.
I don't know that one either. Yeah,
that was. Do you know what that was? The I'll not say his name because it'll go and speak to me again. But that was the Android device made by Amazon who then just decided to speak to me randomly there.
Oh, that's nice, isn't it?
Yeah.
Did it answer the question accurately? It was a good advert for the product.
No, but this is what I like. I'm just going to test it out to show, see if you can hear it. Alexa, play the Celtic song.
Here's a playlist you might like. Irish folk classics on Amazon Music.
Alexa, switch off. You're being rubbish for your advert. You're not. People are not going to buy you.
I was drunken at a barbecue before the summer. And I definitely, it was the first time I'd ever been in a room with one of these things. And yeah, the shouts of get the rebs on. Alexa didn't have, wasn't picking up on that at all. But I'm sure you could program it so that it did.
Right, well, we're once again, we get sidetracked here, don't we? You know?
Anyway, well, is Alexa blowing a chance for that advertising?
God love him. Ayer has been really solid, I'd say, you know, carrying on from last season. But that was a complete brain fart moment, wasn't it? I don't know what the hell he was thinking there. It was actually three fouls in one. He was pulling his arm, pulling his jersey, and then decided to cap it all off with a stupid non-tackle.
Add on top of that, the sweep. So not only has he done the lunge, which, you know, the guy's probably going to buy the penalty from the lunge.
Yeah.
He then throws the leg, you know, diagonally. It really was the most absurdly bad bit of schoolboy defending you'll ever see.
On one side of it, if you're going to go down, you may as well go down in flames, you know, if you're going to do bad.
Yeah, like...
I'll do it right.
Like Arfield on Incham in the Glasgow derby, where I've started pulling this guy's shorts, so I'm just not going to stop now until I get booked. You know, I've started giving away a penalty. I may as well just make sure the penalty happens. But he's goal-sided the defence of the striker marginally closer to the goal line than the striker. Yeah. So all he needs to do is just stand up and be strong.
Stay goal-side, shepherd him to the line. Job's a good, you know.
At very best, the guy, if he's got a wee flick or quick dip of the shoulder, might be able to get the ball in to some extent. But if he's really tight on the guy's not going to get any power or pace on his cross. And the defence should clear it up. I don't know about you, Anthony, but my biggest criticism of Ayer, and I like him, and I think we'll probably end up selling him for £15 million to Dortmund or something like that. I don't know why, I just have it in my mind that he'll suit German football. My biggest criticism of him, he goes to ground far too readily as a defender.
I think this was the worst example of it I've seen, or maybe he's got away with it in other times and I've not really picked up on it. But I mean, it is just that, stay on your feet, stay on your feet, stay on your feet. And he just, that one, it really was head scratching. It was like the entire team, everyone in the dugout, everyone was thinking the exact same thing. He's thinking it as soon as he's done it. He's thinking, oh, what was that? You know, and maybe it's a good thing. He'll learn from it. You know, he's still young.
I have this theory. It's yet to be disproved, but at any level, I don't care whether it's fives with your mates or 11-a-side pro football elite level, at some point you will have a footballer do a brain fart moment like that, and it's completely inexplicable, you know. And like you're saying, Anthony, he can't explain that, you know, and he did it. So
I remember hearing an agent once describing how he rated goalkeepers, and he said he rated them whether they were a 1 in 100, a 2 in 100, a 3 in 100, i.e. how many mistakes they make in 100. And an elite goalkeeper is maybe somewhere between 10 and 1 in 100. You know, maybe someone like Bain might be 20, 25, 30 in 100. And so you're right, Sean, everyone will make a mistake. It's how infrequently they make the mistakes that then make you decide how much of an elite player they are.
He's still quite young as well, isn't he? He's still, what age is Ayer?
He's like 22 or something, isn't he?
Is he as old as that? I don't know if he's...
I think he may be a wee bit younger than that, you know.
Yeah, if you two can fill the...
He joined us when he was, what, 5?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm desperately trying to spell Christopher Ayer absolutely 100% correctly so that Wikipedia can find him, because if you don't do it, whereas I should have just looked up on normal. So, after the penalty... how do you think we cope? Because the you know, getting back to my conversation with St Anthony prior to the game, one of the sort of downsides of Celtic and European games have been somebody makes that stupid mistake,
mm-hmm.
and then we go on to the heads go, and we then have a catalogue of stupid mistakes. So Anthony, how did you think we did?
Well, he did really well. I mean, despite all your positive stats, you know, games like St. Petersburg weren't that long ago.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? Complete implosions are fresh in the memory. So that, you know, there was potential for that to happen. But, like, straight away, you know, we got back in it. We, you know, we started competing. And, you know, it was just a case of... Yeah, we got to half... We were losing half-time, yeah?
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm drifting off.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it was a case of steadying the boat, making sure we didn't capitulate, and, you know, you kind of... I mean, just reading the sort of general tweets by Celtic fans at half-time, it was very much, all right, apart from the brain fart, we're all right, you know, we're in this. Which was definitely the case. I mean, at that point, it could have finished 1-0, we still could have lost, but... We went in, Lennon must have spoke to them, you know, forget about what just happened. Lennon, that was I quite like that. Before the game, Lennon said, you know, bad things will happen in this game.
Mm-hmm.
It's just about how we react to it. You know, that's a different mindset, which maybe we haven't had in the past, you know?
Yeah, and I remember saying last season in the Europa League, this is our level. This is the level where we do well and we compete against teams, and... for me, once we get to this level, it's about the mentality, and it's about the players not getting the wrong mentality. So were you quite happy at halftime, Sean?
Well, yeah, just to echo that and continue on with that point, would we have seen as composed a performance under Brendan Rodgers last season? Arguably not, in the same circumstances. I think it spoke volumes for A, the form that the team is in, B, the confidence that's obviously in the team as well, and also C, the organisation that Lenny and the management team are obviously bringing to the team. Everybody knew their jobs, everybody executed their roles really well. So I was quite impressed, and like you were saying as well on Twitter, I didn't see too many people losing the head, you know, thinking, oh no, we're doomed, you know, all this. Everybody said, we're still in this, you know, we just gotta keep ahead, just keep going, remember our roles, and you know, I could find another cliche if you wanted.
No, go on. No, why not?
That's for two in the bush, etc. Yeah, so I wasn't too worried. You know, okay, it's never nice to be 1-0 down, but I didn't think we're out of it, put it that way.
So we
went. So. And also, you know, it was just before halftime, yeah. Wasn't it? Rooney had a free header, which he should have done better with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, should have done.
So... Yeah, I thought there was a lot to encourage us.
Which actually got me thinking. Was the last time he scored a header his last goal for Hibs against us?
I was at that game. I lived in Edinburgh back then.
Was that at Easter Road, was it? Yeah.
I think that was the best game I ever saw Scott Brown play.
Yeah, as he went, I thought, oh, he doesn't score. And I thought, look, he's a...
We have a contender for the most contrarian comment.
He's a professional footballer at a decent level. He should be capable of... you know, I'm thinking, oh, well, it was Scott Brown with a head. And then I thought, no, wait a minute. He's a professional footballer who has played at an elite level for the bulk of his career. He is capable of heading a football, for goodness sake. And then I remembered that he did score a header against us. So we then move into the second half, Anthony, and penalty gate... with Ryan Christie.
I thought Christie had an interesting game, because I mean, I'm always sort of a supporter of the guy in the 10 position, you know, taking risks. And in the first sort of half an hour, you know, a lot of Christie's touches were, you know, really quite obscene little back heel flicks and stuff that were nearly brilliant.
Uh-huh.
But they always, like, on every occasion, you know, it went left when Edward went right, or Forrest slipped, or, you know what I mean? It was something that was nearly awesome,
yeah,
just didn't work. But Christie kept at it, and then he did that one where he just, you know, he did his accelerate thing, got his toe in, like every good player would, and the guy clattered him. And, you know, it's a clumsy piece of play, but it's a penalty every day of the week, you know, in the modern rules of the game. That was definitely more of a penalty than the one we got, which I think it was a penalty. But when any player does the two leg fall thing,
yeah,
I'm just a bit skeptical. Surprised when he pointed.
It was one of those ones where it is a penalty because he makes the foul, but the way that Forrest goes down makes it look like it's a dive.
Yeah,
but the Christie one, Sean, penalty for you.
Yes, absolutely. And also the referee, to me, didn't have that much of an excuse either. He had a good view of both penalties, and as well as Bayo sending off as well, which is a complete nonsense, which obviously we'll get to later. Yeah, it was a clear penalty all day long. The linesman was right in front of it as well. So, I was, again, inexplicable is the word I would use.
I mean, the only thing I could think of was, because it was right at the edge of the box, and Christie's running away from goal. Mm-hmm. And this shouldn't be, you know, because if it's a foul in the box, it's a penalty. You know, it shouldn't yeah, come into. But the only thing I could think of is that the referee was thinking, "Oh, I'm giving a penalty for something which is 2 inches inside the box for a player who's running away from goal."
Mm-hmm. He could have given the free kick though. I don't know how, you know, it's a free kick or it's a penalty. It's not nothing.
Yeah,
and this is
which
actually
it was.
This is actually where I would agree with Chris Sutton's lack of nuance.
Yes.
If that is not a foul, then it is a dive.
Yeah.
And he should have booked them, you know? I thought the referee was quite flaky tonight, in general anyway. And that was one of the instances where it summed it up for me.
But at that point, I felt we were in complete control of the game.
Mm-hmm.
And completely dominating, without creating any clear-cut chances. And then, Sean, we have the James Forrest penalty, the actual penalty.
Yes, no, and again, it was a clear penalty. I don't know what the defender was thinking, going in that quickly to somebody who's notoriously quite pacey. Not much more to say about it, really. And I thought James Forrest had a relatively quiet game. He didn't actually do too much apart from get us the penalty, really, did he? But then that's, you know, these moments, it's all about the small moments, isn't it, sometimes in games as tight as this.
Yeah, so, and actually, you know, that's one of the things I made, one of the points I made, a couple of texts to mates at half time. When you get to the more elite level, it's the small margins that make a difference. You know, at half time, we should have, Elianusi should have been just a fraction quicker, and we would have been one up, and Dyer should stay on his feet, and they don't get a penalty. And those fine margins, and you only get 4 or 5 chances tops in an elite game, and those fine margins are the differences to why we were 1-0 down and not 0-0 or 1 up.
Yeah. Well, and that's why you keep somebody like James E. Forrest on the pitch for as long as you do as well, isn't it?
Yeah, because he can then just create something.
Yeah, so, and it was no less than we deserved. I also thought it was a really good penalty from Ryan Christie as well. Really good composure, nice technique.
Well, that's what I was going to ask of you, Anthony. What do you think? You'd already mentioned Christie as a number 10 and you liked his flicks. What do you think of his penalty taking?
I was glad. I mean, there's still part of me that sees he's a pretty young lad still. So you admire the confidence of, you know, grabbing the ball, give me the ball, I'm the penalty taker. But my default setting with penalties goes back to the first time I was old enough to go to a Celtic Rangers game was the one, and ironically, Van Hooijdonk was in the studio tonight at BT, and the one where Van Hooijdonk missed the penalty.
Mm-hmm.
So ever since that, every game I've ever been to, every game I've ever watched, when Celtic get a penalty and others are celebrating, I'm always like, oh good, let's see it go in first. Do you know what I mean? I've never celebrated a penalty in 20 years because I saw one missed. And so there's that then that fear of, all right, what you were saying earlier about the big keeper, all of a sudden, you know, that Wren's keeper looks like a giant, you know. And he hit it like a shell, didn't he? And he hit it right in the side net. And it was as good a penalty as you could hit.
Pretty well executed, eh?
There's a close-up of Ryan Christie as he's getting ready for a penalty, and, you know, I know he can't hear me, right? But I'm just saying to the telly, just breathe deeply, slow your heart rate down, calm down, pick where you're going to hit the ball, and hit it there.
Yeah.
Just don't change your mind. Don't just decide now before you run up to the ball where you're hitting that ball, and hit it there. And that's obviously what he did. So one each, and from that point, Sean, how do you think we dealt with the game thereafter?
Well, I thought, you know, coming back to this, I've been taking notes, actually. Can I just say that?
we're going to have to get you off this podcast.
You're far too organised for this. Go on.
Yes, get off.
On strike. I thought our game management at times was really good. I thought the way we applied ourselves was really composed. Grenier had a good chance with his free kick. I thought it was a good save from Fraser Foster, which we actually got away with. And then Jamesy Forrest was unlucky with his own chance, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Again, those small margins that we were talking about. And then the French started getting their knickers in a twist with some of our more robust challenging, didn't they?
Well, so before, what? You're in Celtic TV, aren't you, Anthony, watching it?
No, tonight, it was only the audio. And luckily I managed to find some BT stream, so I did see it.
Ah, right, okay. So the reason I was asking that is when Bolingoli went injured, we'd already brought in Chamon and moved Forrest to play on the left and Christie on the right. So we had a right-footed player on the left. And I thought it was really odd when Johnny Hayes is getting stripped for Bolingoli coming on. Chris Sutton's getting very agitated about it. Was a strange substitution because why is Bauer not coming on? Bauer's right footed. We would have then had no left footed person on the left hand side of the pitch because we would have Forrest and Bauer. I couldn't understand why he was doing that. But the thing that I tell you what really bugged me, and it's something in modern football, we played with 10 men for 2-3 minutes. Because modern footballers, when they're subs, don't wear their jersey in the dugout.
Yeah, I don't get that.
And as a consequence, Hayes wasn't ready to come on.
Why is that the case? Do we know why that's the case?
Maybe if they don't get stripped, they don't need to clean it. Is it something stupid as that?
I really don't. Is it to do with the material? They don't like just sitting about in the material, or...
This is the sort of stuff that keeps me up at night. You know that.
Do you know what? Anybody listening to this, if you can... Right, Sean, what's your Twitter name?
Right. SJH, yeah, isn't it? I don't know. SJH1978.
Anthony, what's your Twitter name?
Anthony Murray 25.
Right, so anybody listening to this, if they know why modern subs don't have their shirt on, can you tweet us and let us know? Because I want to know, because the consequence of that was we were down to 10 men for 2-3 minutes.
It is inexplicable, and yeah, I would like to know the answer to this, but you know, this is where maybe we have poor game management. You know, who was kicking the ball out? You know, who was slowing the game down there at that point to allow us to actually make the sub? Wasn't Mourinho fell out with his Chelsea staff the second time he was around, wasn't it? There was a particular game where the physios weren't getting on quick enough to stop the game because of an injured player, you know? I think there's possibly an element there as well.
But anyway, so they then started to get very agitated. So Anthony, what did you think of Johnny Hayes' challenge, which was the first one that really seemed to get them going?
It was a good, honest, you know, defensive lunge. You know, had to be done. He might have caught the boy. You know, guy might have took a bash, but you know these things happen. You know, it's at the elite level. They do fly around. I've said this before on the podcast that the amount of like ankles that get caught, that Chelsea boy the other day on Match of the Day, you know, took an absolute wallop in the ankle. This happens all the time. Whether it's a piece of malicious intent or just the speed of the modern game, it happens a lot. So yeah, it was a sort of trailing leg, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
He
clearly got the ball. I think the problem was the way he went through. He gets to the ball as the Wren player's foot goes down, which means that the Wren player's foot's, I think, between Hayes' right and left leg as he's going through. But it's just...
Yeah, and the speed that he's coming through as well, you know, obviously added to the robustness of it. But, look, you know, as Anthony's saying, these challenges happen quite a lot in games up and down the country, never mind at UEFA level. He wasn't injured. He came back on and played on. I think they came across to me as a wee bit precious, quite frankly, you know.
So talking of precious, Sean, what did you then think of the first bio booking?
It was a yellow card. He was leading with the elbow. Could he have got a red? I didn't think it was a red. I thought it was accidental. Yeah, pretty much summed up for me. I agreed with Chris Sutton's analysis of it.
Anthony,
well.
you on Bio's first yellow?
The first one, again, I agreed with what Sutton said. You know, you have to protect yourself.
Yeah.
You know, I understand that position. I guess if he caught the guy, you know, he caught the guy. The strange one was as I watched the game, I thought the second yellow was total nonsense. Mm-hmm. You know, I really did. And then I was watching it back, you know, like super slow-mo stuff on Twitter. The people that were posting it this will absolve Bio. But the more I watched it, the more I thought maybe it's his first leg does catch him. Because I thought it was the second leg goes nowhere near the guy's head. But the more I watched it, I thought you could maybe convince yourself, because I've kind of convinced myself, that maybe he did catch him with his first leg.
But his reaction was delayed, wasn't it?
And it was. I mean, yeah.
But the ball's loose.
Like.
But the ball's loose, so he's quite entitled to go for it.
Yeah.
He still
didn't have
clumsy,
power,
though.
So. I think, you know, he was, and it was a bit naive of him going in for the ball. He could have just ran in and, you know, stopped the goalkeeper from getting up too quickly or anything like that.
What I was assuming when the ref dished out the second yellow was that, you know, you were going to then get a close up and the keeper was going to have like a gash on his head or something. Do you know what I mean? I thought, fair dues, if you go in and look and he's been smashed here, then you can say, all right, I've called that wrong, second yellow, you're off. But the guy then gets up and it's like, oh right, no, I've been completely hoodwinked here, you know.
But that's the thing about it, it's the way that the ref emphatically rejected that it was anything initially, you know, really over dramatic wave of his hands to say no thing.
He seemed to calm down the situation and then, oh right, no, I've changed my mind. after a couple of minutes had actually passed, you know, it was preposterous.
Yeah, I thought it was really odd. And as you say, Anthony, it's not as if, you know, because he then gets persuaded to go and look at the goalkeeper by the Wren players. It's not as if we then, as you say, we then see blood pouring from his face and he's thinking, oh, I'm ballsed up here, I need to change my decision.
It might have been a degree of, I mean, it's completely against the rules, but a sort of a degree of karma where he feels guilty about, you know, us playing against 10 men, having Bayou taken out their guy.
Yeah.
They've used up their subs.
Aye.
And I can understand, imagine this was at Celtic Park and we were in that situation. We'd be absolutely, you know, it'd be like... Madrid in 1974. The injustice of it, when they really didn't do anything wrong, all they did was kick the shit out of us and get away with it because the referee was weak.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? A situation like that, you know, here we go. It happened 10 years before I was born. It's still pissing me off, you know? Something like that. I can imagine why the ref is maybe, you know.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, if I had the Celtic Park and we were down to 10 men and the guy who had our guy going off was still on the park and then was involved in that incident, the howls in the Celtic Park crowd for that guy to get a second yellow card, that would have been...
It would have been deafening, yeah. It doesn't make it any more right, though.
No, it doesn't.
And I think referees have to be a bit stronger in that and, you know, a bit more resolute. But, you know, I suppose in retrospect as well, I come back to this, he was quite naive going for the ball in the first place, you know. He should have maybe just ran into the keeper, made sure he didn't get up, made sure, you know, the team had time to go back and get organised. Because there's still a point at the end of the day, you know, and every point's going to count in this campaign in such a tough group, I guess.
Well, so to then go on to the so final whistle. We said at the beginning of the podcast, we're all happy with the result, one each. So we're happy with that. We've gone to France and got a point on the road. And tonight, Cluj beat Lazio 2-1. Now, I've not looked. I'm surmising that our next game is at home to Cluj. And let me just check.
It is, yeah.
Yeah, we're at home to Cluj, which means that Lazio must be at home to Rennes. So you're immediately looking. I mean, I genuinely think, based on the performances, we'll beat Cluj home and away.
That's what I thought before before ball was kicked in this tournament. When the group came out, I was super confident. It was only before the game I kind of bought into the Rennes hype. But today, I mean, Rennes could come out and give us a good game in Glasgow. You know, no doubt about that. But the way we are building confidence and a bit of structure, I'm really confident we're getting through this group.
Well, so if we, without getting away with ourselves here, you know, and doing the type of thing that you always hear happening with Rangers after they have a decent result in the first game of a group, if we win next week, we are on 3 points. So only a Rennes victory in Rome, if we win, only a Rennes victory in Rome will not have us top of the group.
How many points is it for a win?
Three points. Sorry, we'll be on 4 points. So So Rennes would need to win in Rome for us to be not top of the group after two games, home and away. If we win the next game,
well, I'm trying to see who's in front of us before that next game though. Right, we've got Kilmarnock at home, Hibs away.
Partick Thistle in the League Cup.
Partick Thistle in the League Cup, of course. Yeah.
So
and then Cluj. On the 3rd of October. And then we have Livingston away, Ross County home, and then Lazio at home. So they're two huge home games, which if we come out of those with full points would be absolutely enormous, wouldn't it?
It would. So one of the things that we spoke about in the last podcast, Anthony, I'm just thinking about everything to do with today's game and some of the things we talked about. One of the things on the last podcast we talked about after the Rangers game was the more dramatic style of Neil Lennon. The more direct style, I should say, of Neil Lennon. And for me, that was the biggest problem, something you touched on, Sean, with Brendan away from home in Europe. He wanted us to play, I like the style, you know, I like a passing game of football and all the passing out from the back. But at that level, I'm not sure we've got the players that are capable of doing that. So do you think, Anthony, the more direct and the more pragmatic style of defending, where defenders get the ball up the park, do you think that's more suited to the level that we're at for playing away from home, for playing European football? What do you think, Anthony?
If the players that are getting selected to do it, yeah, I mean, you could see this are quite deliberate. Get it to Edouard and hope that, you know, he flicks off little scraps to those around him. It didn't always work. I mean, that's one of the things that I guess Rodgers would argue, and something that I kind of agree with, is that, you know, it's low percentage football.
Yeah.
I mean, nothing I know this is to bring it back to one of your favourites. Nothing angered me more as a Celtic fan than watching us lump balls up to Samaras that got lost. Now, you're going to tell me Samaras won a lot of his balls. I'm going to tell you he didn't win as many as he should have or could have or would have if we'd played proper football and kept the ball like Rodgers' team would. So it's about choosing the right players to play clever football. I liked some of the stuff. I loved the Maisie that, that McGregor went on across the box. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah. I have no issue with that. Obviously, if a player tries it every time, people are going to figure him out. And he's going to get caught and look like a dick. Or if he's not good enough to do it, you know, he's going to mess it up. But McGregor's actually good enough. And that little diagonal run he went where he just... You know, I wouldn't want Brown doing that because I don't trust Brown's touch. Uh-huh. You know, after the third or fourth touch. But McGregor, I thought that was brilliant. And he knocked out to ball in. You know, that's one way to, you know, keep the ball without it just being tippy-tappy passing. You know, it's just carrying it into space. And that was one of the things that I thought our
tactical approach was a bit more than just lumping up to Edward tonight, Bernice. So, you know.
There was bits of it.
Well, Bullingolly was getting down the wing quite a bit in the first half. He was knocking real good balls in. He was very unlucky. You know, we were very unlucky with that Elanusi chance.
It's not the same as when Rodgers' team was... You know, when people were clinging on to Scott Brown's ball retention in the Champions League stats. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? When 90% of those passes would have been to Lustigen back.
I think Van der Sane was particular. Yeah. It was direct all the time. I think the difference for me, the difference is when we are less likely to take risks in trying to retain possession at the back. I think that's the difference. That if the players are under pressure at the back, there's, you know, I think under Brendan Rodgers, if they were under pressure at the back, they would have been told to, you know, keep passing the ball until the pressure releases. Whereas I think under Neil Lennon, if you feel under pressure, you get the ball to the final, you know, get it into the final third of the park, and let's have the, you know, allows us to regroup and get a formation back on track. So we're all chuffed to bits with that result and that performance. Anthony, we've got a game on Saturday against Sunday against Kilmarnock. Sunday at 1 o'clock against Kilmarnock. Do you think Neil Lennon will make much change to the team?
It'll be interesting one. So is it Celtic Park?
It's a Celtic Park, yeah.
Right, so I mean, a game like that would be a great chance for, you know, Elyounoussi to really cement himself in the team. But that said, I'd, if Mikey Johnson's fit, you know, I'd bring Mikey Johnson back. I don't know. I wouldn't really mix it up much, to be honest. I mean, I'm not a fan of rotating teams anyway. I think the great players play until they can, and that's what I would persevere with. So I wouldn't make any radical changes. Maybe the right back, just give Bauer a game. I don't know.
So I wondered whether he might just try and find a way of getting Bauer and Greg Taylor a game.
Yeah.
Maybe, you know, particularly because that would be Greg Taylor playing against his old team.
Yeah, and guaranteed to score.
Yeah, exactly. what about you, Sean? Do you think there'll be many changes to the team on Saturday or Sunday, rather?
Yeah, I'm with Anthony on this one. I wouldn't shake it up too much. Maybe two changes at most. It also depends who's fit and who's not as well. It'd be nice to see maybe Swed come into the team. I was going to say Scott Sinclair there for a second, but that's just mental, isn't it?
It's absolutely mental.
Why would I think that? maybe in chance.
I think you and I have got an equal chance of getting a game with Scott Sinclair at the moment.
Well, I don't want to blow my own trumpet, but I've been playing really well in sevens lately. And I my penalty execution was Ryan Christie-esque last week as well. Yeah, maybe Bauer at right back as well. It also depends, but Bullingolly going off was a little bit of a worry. I would maybe not be surprised to see Greg Taylor start.
Yeah, actually, it was the way that straight away he was saying he was off, and when the physio came over, it was straight away signalling that he was off makes me think that he'll not make it. So, Sean, what's your prediction for the score on Sunday?
I think it'll be relatively tight. I think it'll be 2-0 to Celtic.
2-0, okay. Anthony?
5-0, smack him. Best team in the country by a mile. Got a loaded squad. Why not?
No, we are the best team in the country by a mile. So, well, that's excellent.
Just have to keep on proving it, though, don't we?
Yeah, and we will. So with that, I will say, guys, thanks very much.
Right, hail, hail.
Thank you, Harry.
Cheers.
Thank you, Anthony.
Cheers.
Bring me sunshine in your smile.
So I hope you enjoyed the podcast. Anthony and Sean Huddleston give out their Twitter on the pod, and I'll put it out on the links. We have the game on Sunday, and before the game on Sunday against Kilmarnock, there is a food collection at Celtic Park. So if you go on Celtic website, I think you'll find a link to what foodstuffs they're looking for you to bring along. So food collection on Sunday, then it's a Celtic game, and then also straight after the Celtic game, well, not straight after because the game's at 1 o'clock, so you can hang about for an hour or two if you want to get across to the basketball. Glasgow Rocks, owned by big Celtic fans, Thistle fans for 5 minutes, and then back to Celtic fans again. Get yourself across to the Emirates Arena for the opening of the basketball for the season. Anyway, enough of me, and you can go online at the Glasgow Rocks website and you'll get tickets for that. I think there's 5,000-6,000 people expected there. So enough of me. This is me, Harry Brady. That was him, Sean Huddleston, and him, Anthony Murray.
So much joy you can give. 2 weeks brand new, bright tomorrow. Make me happy through the years. Never bring me any tears. Let your arms be as warm as the sun from up above. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love, sweet love. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring